We all know that women are not funny. And no one proves it better than Kay Ballard, the accidental lawyer who is the accidental host of our show. Of course, every accident that Kay Ballard encounters is intentional. And now her intention is to accidentally disprove the show's premise. So sit back and enjoy a fun conversation that matters between Kay and today's fabulous featured guest. Welcome to Women Are Not Funny Radio.
Hello, this is Kay Ballard, and I'd like to welcome you to a very special edition of Women Are Not Funny Radio. Yes, I know, I refer to every single show as special, but there's a reason for that. It's because they're all very special to me. And today's show is no different, and yet it is different, because today I'm going to do my very best, with the help of today's featured guest, to horrify you. Regular listeners are saying, but Kay, you horrify us every single show. I know that, but today it's intentional, because we have as our guest, Sarah McDonald. She's an indie filmmaker, and she specializes in horror movies. She's been getting a lot of attention for her films, Windows on the Soul and Let Them Eat, a film about zombie kittens. Sarah McDonald is a lot of fun and a very good sport, because she agreed to have this conversation with the world's foremost non-expert on horror movies. That's me, because actually, in my very long life, which we all know is not all that long, given that I'm quite young and getting younger by the day, but during my life, I've seen very few horror movies, and that's been by choice. Because in case you didn't know, horror movies are scary. Well, since I am the world's foremost non-expert on horror movies, I decided that to get ready for this show, I needed to bring in the Women Are Not Funny research team, which I did. It's me. Okay, I'll be honest, it's me. There's no research team. No. I do have some producers, and they could help me with research, but did they? No, not really. If they went to a movie, they probably saw something else. Who knows? Maybe comedy. Maybe they said, we are so bored from working on Women Are Not Funny, that we need a good laugh, and they went to see a comedy. So they left it to me. And I could have done that. I could have rented a whole raft full of horror movies. And by that, I mean downloaded them and watched them online. I decided instead to do a little personal research, because there's one topic that never ceases to interest me, and that's me. I had lunch with my parents for research purposes and also for nutrition, and I asked them, why is it that you didn't permit me to watch horror movies when I was a child? And the answer came back right away, and it wasn't what I suspected. My mother said, horror movies frightened you. They made you have bad dreams. Okay, I buy that. I buy that horror movies can make you have bad dreams. But the fact is, and I'm here to confirm it, you can have bad dreams regardless of whether you watch horror movies. It's true. I've had dozens of them. Dozens. And I can't blame horror movies. I really can't. It's possible that if I watched horror movies, I'd have even more bad dreams, but there's really no way to know. So we're going to talk to Sarah McDonald. And I'd love to know your questions for her. But it's too late now, isn't it? And my questions simply won't be as good. I mean, I'm going to try, but I have nothing. I really don't. Now, keep this in mind. I'm very open to the possibility that I might learn to like horror movies. And if anyone would give me an incentive to be interested in them, it's today's guest. So we're going to talk with her now. But before we really can get started, you know what I must ask her. I have to find out why she's really here.
Oh, Sarah McDonald, I just have to know. Are you here today on Women Are Not Funny Radio? Are you going to be using this, your appearance here, as a stepping stone to something better?
Well, I have been working on a plan for the past 20 years, kind of under the covers of world domination. And I've heard that, you know, your show's getting quite a lot of airplay, so I think that would be quite a good step for me in my quest.
Well, see, that's my problem, Sarah. I mean, people do know that. They do understand that about the show, the power that it has to propel people's careers and actually even their personal lives forward. So I'm just always afraid that I'm going to be used, but there's something that's even more scary to me, and that's the possibility that you might actually be here to take over my show.
I can't really comment on that at this time, but you'll probably find out in the next couple of days.
Oh, well, that was kind of my next question, but I guess I already have the answer. Are you going to try to scare me today?
I can't help but what I am.
Well, what you are is a fabulous director of what are now indie horror movies, among other film projects. So I'm curious, just looking ahead, where would you actually like to be 20 years from now, Sarah McDonald?
Oh, 20 years from now, I would love to have a couple of feature films, or horror movies underneath my belt, and maybe, you know, have a small, illustrious writing career. And of course, if I could complete the goal of world domination in another 20 years, I would consider that a huge success.
Well, that would be, but 20 years from now, you don't see yourself running a studio, a major film studio? How about that? Is that appeal to you at all?
Well, you see, that kind of depends. Like right now, where I am in the film industry, I really enjoy working on the smaller projects. And I really like finding small projects that people are very passionate about and that I can become passionate about. And I just have a fear that if I did, you know, either owned a production studio or worked for one, that it would sort of kind of become more of a machine where you kind of feel like you have to pump out, you know, films to keep staying relevant as opposed to finding films that you feel really passionate towards and working on them.
Oh, here is a perfect example. A perfect example of the kind of thing I'm always doing that even I find annoying. Did you notice that Sarah's big dream wasn't big enough for me? I had her running a major film studio as if that's something she would even care about.
Well, one thing that I like to do and it's mainly Sarah because I'm such a lovely person, I like to really help people and particularly my friends who are here on Women Are Not Funny Radio. So would you like me to give you a little help?
Sure.
Well, you know, I just couldn't help but notice that 20 years from now, you'd like to have a couple of feature films, as you said, under your belt. Darling, they're not supposed to be under your belt. They're supposed to be in theaters.
Yes, that is very true. That's what I mean, but have already kind of gone out through the theaters and perhaps become cult favorites.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just keep that in mind. That's just
okay.
That's just a little advice. Put the films in the theaters, not under your belt, even if they are little projects.
Okay.
So, I can see it, though. I can see a great deal of success for you throughout the next 20 years. But so that's not hard for me to imagine. But what I'd like to do, because I think our listeners would really like to know, let's go back 20 years. Tell me what you were doing 20 years ago.
Well, 20 years ago, I was actually living on Pictou Island, which is a very, very small island that's actually located on the east coast of Canada in between Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island. And it's about 6 miles long by 1.5 miles. And my parents moved us over there when I was 3. And there's no paved roads or power lines over there. It's all run by solar panels and windmills. So it was definitely very different than where I am right now.
Well, yeah, what kind of childhood was that like? I mean, what were your parents thinking, darling?
Well, I'm not entirely sure what they were thinking because I was 3, but I do know that the land was available over there. My mother went over there when I was 6 months old and basically fell in love with the place. So they just thought it would be a really good place to raise a family, which is amazing for them because they actually had to do a lot to raise a family over there because there's no school over there. So my mom actually homeschooled us till I was in grade 6. And then for grade 7 to grade 10, we did correspondence studies through the mail. And then we moved off the island for grade 11 and 12 so that we could attend like a high school over on the quote-unquote mainland so we could get an official high school diploma so it would be easier for us to get into college.
You absolutely had an experience that not many of us can relate to, but in some respects it does sound a little horrifying. I mean, what did you do about hot rollers?
Hot rollers? That is actually, because it's a heating element, it takes a lot of power, so we didn't really grow up with hot rollers or hair dryers or anything like that, which is kind of great because, you know, you were kind of really allowed to grow up and very much be yourself because you didn't really have any peer pressure because there's only 3 other kids on the island growing up with you. So
you did not aspire to lead the dream life of a dream Barbie?
No. No, I was pretty much a tomboy growing up. My mom always told us you can stay up as long as you want, as long as you guys are reading. So, you know, you're like 8 years old and you're like, ha ha, I'm going to stay up till 8 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night. And the entire time you're reading, which is, you know, just transformed into this insatiable love for reading that I have even to now.
Well, right. And I love what you say about how it fueled your imagination. Because I would suppose you would have to have a pretty good imagination to be able to imagine an entire movie.
Oh, yes.
Like Sarah, I too loved to read when I was a child. And at our house, the rules were a little different than they were at hers. You see, even though there were compromises, eventually it was lights out. So, being an enterprising young woman, I invented a device that would permit me to beat the system. It was an after lights out reading device. I don't know what I called it, but what it was is a shoebox. I cut a hole in one end of it for a flashlight. I cut a hole in the top to read from, and I put the book in the box. That way I could read well into the night. When lights were supposed to be out, I could read undetected. And I was so determined to engage in this illegitimate after lights out reading, I even took my invention with me to summer camp.
Well, really, like, you need to find that one good little idea that kind of sparks off everything else. And then well, having the tenacity to write it all down and always helps as well.
Yeah, well, it always takes that.
So even though I'm the world's foremost non-expert on horror movies, I did realize that there are so many different kinds, and I wondered if, given that, horror movies was too big to be considered a genre. But Sarah pointed out to me that all the different kinds of horror movies are merely subcategories to the genre horror movies. Then she pointed out that actually, horror may be something even more.
Well, it could even be considered a way of life as well.
Oh, my. Well, interesting. So, Sarah, here, yeah. You know, I just have, my questions are naive. I know that. My questions are naive, but I'm very sophisticated. Please keep that in mind.
Okay.
You know, all evidence to the contrary. Okay. So here's just what I want to know. Do horror movies cause bad dreams?
I don't think horror movies cause bad dreams. I think people cause bad dreams. So whether or not that was your interpretation of a horror movie, maybe you took it a little too much to heart, but I don't think horror movies cause bad dreams.
Okay. Well, here's my next question. Do horror movies keep you awake at night?
For me personally, no, they do not. But I have an interesting story about that because in the past 2 years, I've actually had nightmares due to a movie. And it wasn't a horror movie. It was actually a documentary called The Cove, which is all about dolphin hunting in an area in Japan. And I had nightmares for 3 nights after watching that movie.
Wow. So you are open to the idea that horror movies or movies in general could affect someone's sleep.
Yes.
I suppose that's part of the power of being a director, right? The whole idea that you could make something that is so remarkable to experience that someone's very sleep was affected.
Oh, for sure. And that for me, like if a movie that I'm watching actually causes me to even give like a physical reaction to it, even though that I know it's all fake, you know, that's plastic over there and that's an interesting combination of corn syrup and red food coloring over there. If they can get me to forget that, they've definitely done their jobs at making a fantastic film.
Well, yes, but see, this is the part that I really can't get my head around. Do people want to be scared?
Well, I think it's kind of like another quest for adrenaline. Like, some people jump out of airplanes, and that's not exactly, you know, my way that I'd like to get adrenaline, but I would love to sit down and watch a fantastic foreign horror film and get scared out of my pants and get my adrenaline that way.
But do you have reason to believe that a lot of people who like horror movies are adrenaline junkies?
I think that has a lot to do with it. I think also people like exploring like their own fears and, you know, kind of seeing them play out on screen just so they can maybe even desensitize themselves to a little bit. And to others, it's an escape from reality. Like these filmmakers, I find with horror movies especially, because it's the realities they're building are so complex and out there sometimes. They have to really try at their craft to really carry that film across. So, again, you forget that it's all fake. So.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That kind of rings true to me. Coincidentally, last night I was listening to someone online who was actually a marketing would-be guru, and he said the words just out of the blue. And, he, you know, my guess is he had absolutely no idea that we were going to be talking tonight. Just totally coincidental. What do you think about that? What he said was, Sarah, he said, I need to get some terror in my head. I need to do something that will terrify me.
I could totally understand that statement. Like, it kind of shakes people loose. You know what I mean? It kind of, you know, if you feel like you're in this day-to-day, 9-to-5 job cycle and you sit down and you watch a fantastic horror film, it kind of like shakes you loose and, you know, maybe helps you think about things you weren't thinking about before.
Oh, man, now you do have me intrigued. You really do. Okay, now there's an expression. I've heard it all my life. I just wonder what there is to it. Is there such a thing as scared silly?
I think you could perhaps, you know, I think you could achieve that. Like, it's just one of those things to have yourself, you know, terrified of the point where you just can't process it anymore and your body just shuts down.
But you don't think it scared silly might refer to something else? You're just silly. You know, you get scared, you become silly, scared silly.
Okay, I think, yes, I think it could be done that way as well. Sorry.
You know, I think I would like to do some original research in that field, if indeed I haven't already.
Oh, you see, I was hoping for something else. I was hoping that Sarah would tell me that the expression scared silly, that there's something to it, that it can be taken literally. Because wouldn't that be the greatest thing? On days when I'm not feeling terribly inspired and yet I need to do a show, I'd merely watch a horror movie and then be scared silly.
Is there something about horror movies? Are they just kind of by nature campy?
Well, I kind of think it depends on the type of horror movie that you're looking at because, like, really, you say the genre horror movie, and there's a lot of subcategories that fall underneath that, like werewolves and zombies and vampires and paranormal and by Satanism. I could go on forever. But the thing is that there's definitely one of those subgenres are the B horror movies, the campy ones. And I think because a lot of people enjoy that just because they're not as scary. They have scary moments, but those tense beats are always broken with some comedy. So it kind of allows you to, you know, enjoy the horror genre but not get too scared at the same time.
What is the difference between a horror movie and a movie about something horrible?
I guess that would kind of depend on what the horrible act is. Like, to me, I instantly think of, say, a war movie. Typically, war movies would be more considered to be dramatical works of film as opposed to a horror film. When you think about it, though, the gore and the blood that is in one of those films are usually worse than a horror film.
I mean, you're so right. I had, I would say about, maybe 15 years ago, and I haven't kept to it, but I sort of have. I made the decision I wasn't going to see any more war movies because they were just too upsetting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why do I need those vivid images in my head for the rest of my life? So here would be another example. I'm sure you're familiar with the HBO series John Adams, about the American president, John Adams.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I didn't see it when it was first run on HBO, but I ordered the DVDs and watched them. I was very curious about, because it's certainly a time in American history and in world history that's very phenomenally interesting, everything mm-hmm. that was going on. And he was an interesting character, and he was involved in a very interesting marriage. You know, just all kinds of reasons I was interested in John Adams. So I rented those DVDs, and I think it was a good series, but it left me, Sarah, with an image I'll never get out of my head that is just so horrifying to me. They tarred and feathered someone. My entire life I've heard the expression tarred and feathered, but my mm-hmm. imagination never really went there to what that would be like. And it was such a vivid depiction, and he was so horrified and so believably, you know, wounded by the experience, both physically and emotionally. Mm-hmm. It was just something that will stay with me for the rest of my life. And so I go, oh, wow, do I really need this? But I'm curious about a filmmaker's perspective. That's really what you're trying to do, isn't it? Evoke that kind of reaction that people would, not to horrify people necessarily, but to evoke that kind of reaction that would be very, very strong for the people watching your shows?
Well, definitely, if you can achieve that, you're definitely achieving your goal. But I have to say, personally, as many horror movies that I watch, I very rarely watch war movies. Because it's just, it's too real for me. And it's like, you know, this is going on in the world right now, so, you know, I don't want to subject myself by watching a fantasy of it. Which is, you know, kind of interesting, but I'll sit down and watch a horror movie about a monster that'll go and, you know, completely destroy Mexico.
So I just don't, you know, I don't need those horrible, violent images as part of my psyche. I'm weird enough is kind of the decision I made, but the thing is, you listed some, okay, zombie movies.
Yes.
What about, where would it fall in the movie like Psycho?
Oh, Psycho to me is a total classic. So, you know, some people would consider it more psychological, and it definitely also falls under, you know, serial killer subgenre as well. But Alfred Hitchcock is such a brilliant, brilliant director. And for sure, like Psycho and The Birds, I totally consider those to be horror movies, even though they might not be considered horror movies by other people.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, you know how I know they're not considered horror movies by other people? It's because my parents permitted me to watch them. So, you know, they hadn't figured out that they were horror movies. But what about a movie, for example, like Pulp Fiction? Would you consider that a horror movie? You know, it's pretty bloody.
So I asked Sarah about one movie that I found particularly intriguing and horrifying, Pulp Fiction. Would that be considered a horror movie? Not according to Sarah, even though certainly Pulp Fiction had lots of blood and brains flying everywhere. She said that would be a drama. Same thing for a movie like Scarface. I get it. A horrifying drama. Now, I have to admit, it surprised me how much I love Pulp Fiction. It's really a quirky movie, and it's very, very bloody.
What did you do? A lot of people are going to want to know. What did you do to prepare yourself for this sort of career, a career as a filmmaker, and then a filmmaker who specializes in the horror genre?
Well, I guess I didn't really do anything in particular. I've always loved horror, and then I've had this opportunity to work with Charlie Mack Productions, who in turn helped me create my first horror, which all came out of a conversation that I had with Tara McDonald. We were sitting down at a diner.
Well, wait. I've got to interrupt you.
Sure.
This is the most amazing story.
So picture this. Sarah was having coffee with her boss at Charlie Mack Productions. And the purpose of the meeting was to let Sarah know that they wanted to bring her on full time. So when she was asked, "What would you like to be working on?" Sarah, who'd been making health and wellness videos for young women, said, "Well, I'd really like to be making horror movies." And guess what? Her boss went for it. To heck with health and wellness videos for young women. Let's make horror movies. To me, this is the example I love of a conversation that takes a distinctive right turn.
She just thought that was a great idea and just happened to have this piece of property in her family that way out in rural Cape Breton, and was like, "Let's see if we can do this."
Wait a minute. That's amazing. I'm in somewhat the same situation. I have property in my family that's way scary, scarier than can be imagined. Some of it's actually in rural Oklahoma. But even though I have access to all this scary property, it's never even crossed my mind until now, that I might produce a horror movie.
So we actually were looking around for scripts, and we didn't really find anything that kind of fit in with what we were looking to do. So I actually wrote one and submitted it to the company under a pen name. And
oh, wow. That was sneaky, wasn't it?
Well, I kind of wanted them to be honest about it. I was afraid that if I had submitted with it and said, you know, this is my name, or this is my script, rather, that they would feel like they had to do it, whereas if I had submitted it under a pen name, then, you know, they would honestly say, oh, yes, you know, this is good, and let's do this. So what happened was, after I had given it to her, Tara had said, you know, I read the script and everything like that, and it's good, but it just made me think, you know, you should try writing something. And I was like, well, I wrote that script. And she was like, okay, excellent, let's do it.
You are one sneaky woman, aren't you?
Well, you know, wily.
Wily, absolutely wily. You know, and it kind of brings me to another whole point. Well, I want to talk about this production that began in such an unusual way. But what do you suppose a woman horror director looks like?
Woman horror director looks like?
Mm-hmm.
On set or off set?
You might wonder, what does the director of a horror movie look like? Does she look goth? Or zombie-like? Would just meeting her scare you out of your wits? Well, in Sarah's case, I don't think you'd ever guess her chosen occupation. She has such a ready smile. She just looks happy.
Yeah, I think people would never believe it, and you must encounter that all the time. People, you meet people, and they say, what do? And you say, oh, I direct horror movies. Doesn't that just cause a few jaws to drop?
It has on a few occasions. I think my favorite time was at the Silver Wave Film Festival in New Brunswick a couple of years ago. I actually, Windows of the Soul and Let Them Eat both played at the midnight screening. And in the screening, there was a couple of people that I had worked with before, but they had never really seen any of my projects that I have done. And after Let Them Eat played, which is, it's a flash animation about zombie kittens with laser beam eyes. And after it played, just this person who has known me for a while just turned around and was like, I can't believe that came out of your head. Like, you are messed up.
Well, Sarah, you have to admit, zombie kittens is something that, you know, causes someone to pause, right?
But they're so cute, yet evil.
Yes, well, you know, you could probably say that about all cats. So how long did it take to go from script to actually starting production? What's involved?
Tell me what you do.
I can, all of us think we know a lot about movies, and we do know more about movies, but I can throw out little expressions like storyboard. You have to come up with a storyboard first?
Well, the first thing I did was sit down, write the script, which took me about 4 hours. And then the script had to go through a couple of rewrites and making sure, you know, the characters had their arcs developed and everything. And then once the script's locked, which I think took about another 10 revisions. So it's like when you start off with a script and you decide to do it, you're not even going directly from that script. You still need to work it with your budget and what you're capable of doing. And then once that's done, then you do your script breakdown into, like, what kind of props do you need, how many different locations, and then you go into your storyboarding and figuring out your shot list. And then once you have your shot list nailed down, then you actually have to start doing your scheduling and figuring out, you know, how many pages are we going to shoot on what days. And then once you have that all figured out, then you still have to order all your film equipment, get permissions for where you're going to be shooting, find your talent, and do auditions, and then find your crew.
See, that is amazing. So really, you were, and I suppose that's the case much of the time when you're talking about an indie production, you were a project manager.
Yes.
Huge.
Especially on small indie projects, there's not a lot of people, and usually, you know, you have your producer and you have your director, and a lot of them share a lot of the workload. And then hopefully you can get a production manager in there and a production coordinator, which will just help everything become a lot better, especially when you're shooting in the middle of nowhere, because you need to have your contingency plans completely figured out, because, like, we had no cell phone reception. You couldn't just go, oh, no, we forgot something. We'll have to run to the store, because that was 3-4 hours away. We had a couple of problems just due to weather, which you couldn't really foresee. Actually, I always say this because it was my first film. I thought we'd shoot it all exterior because we wouldn't need a lot of interiors, and we only ended up doing, like, I think 2 scenes interiors, but I just thought it would be easier. But in retrospect, you're completely at odds with weather. Like, if it's going to be sunny, then, you know, that's great, you can shoot. If it's not going to be sunny, well, can we cheat these angles or something like that? So we ended up actually dropping at least 1 scene when we went to shoot as well.
Oh, my.
Yes.
And so how many people were part of the production? And by that, I mean, how many people went out on location?
We had about 20 people in the middle of nowhere.
I was thinking, you know, are zombie movies just kind of a different sort of paintball? You know, just the opportunity to get painted up and blooded up and all of that?
Oh, for sure. It is so much fun to be in a zombie film. I actually worked for a school for part of my illustrious career, and we had students in there that were filming a zombie film, and I was one of the first people to be like, yes, put me in there. I will totally get make-upped up for 2 hours just to be in a film for 2 minutes.
Well, I can sort of relate to this, because I, too, like to be made up. But I've never wanted to be made up like a zombie.
Well, for sure it was a learning experience, because it was my first film, and I wasn't entirely sure of, you know, myself per se, because it was my first real big job as being a director. But there was a lot of good people on the crew that really tried to help support, and for sure my film career so far has been you know, a constant process of learning. And I find for sure with when I went to do Let Them Eat, I was a lot more sure of my creative voice, and that came out almost exactly as it was in my head. And even with the things I did afterwards, like the Coming Home music video that I did with Chrissy Cochran, like that on set, we didn't even have an assistant director, which is usually one of the most important people that you have on set, because they're the ones who yell at everybody and make sure everybody's doing their job, and we make sure that we, you know, you're staying on schedule and everything like that. And we didn't even need somebody like that on our set, and we had everything done actually ahead of schedule. It was just a really
wow.
Neat crew that we worked with.
So just total cooperation.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. I have my own theory, and that is you have such a great personality that no wonder people get behind you. I know that just in my dealings with you in preparation for this. So, person with a nice personality, here's a question for you. Do you just like scaring people, or are you an artist? Which is it?
I think I'm both. Because I can't say that I'm not an artist, because even if I'm not using film as an outlet, I'm still painting, I'm still writing. But I like scaring people, and I like making people think about things maybe a little bit differently than they were thinking about it before.
Well, it's no accident. In fact, it was engineered. Our featured indie musician today is Chrissy Cochran, and she's singing her song, Mexico. Thank you. This is Kay Ballard, and you're listening to Women Are Not Funny Radio on Jackalope 105 FM. So all of this made me wonder, what's really going on here? I asked Sarah, have horror movies become the new chick flick?
So this is just, you know, I need your opinion. Sure. Is a horror movie a good date movie?
Well, I guess that would kind of depend. Like, I think that especially, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, like, horror movies were always depicted in movies that, you know, those are the ones you want to take your girl to because, you know, she'll want to, like, be held and stuff and comforted throughout the film.
So I asked Sarah, are women now more likely to seek horror as a cinematic experience?
I know a lot of fantastic women who love horror movies. Like my roommate that I had in film school, when Hannibal came out, that scene where he was sent through the window and his innards fell on the sidewalk, like she made me watch that probably 10, 15 times just because she thought it was amazing.
Oh my. Talk about a roommate from hell. A roommate that would make you watch someone's guts fall out the window 15 times? That's outrageous, Sarah.
There are some gender issues both in horror and also in filmmaking and also in the whole field of acting, directing. You know, it's, do you believe it's more difficult for women directors?
I think it is fundamentally more difficult for women because if you just look at it, really, there's only 7% of the directors out there right now are women. And you look, for example, at Kathryn Bigelow, who in 2009 won the Oscar for Best Director. Well, the Oscars, they've been going for 80 years, and that's the first time that they've actually, you know, recognized a woman with an actual award. So I definitely think that it is kind of really hard to get out there and everything like that, but I also think that if you look at it more on a grassroots level, there are a lot of opportunities out there to support independent filmmakers. Like where I come from here in Halifax, we have the Atlantic Filmmakers Cooperative, which every year go and fund films for new filmmakers to try and get them experienced in using film and running a crew. And I had an awesome opportunity to work on one of those last summer for a woman director, Ashley McKenzie, and she did Rhonda's Party. And that's out going around the film festivals now. And I also had an opportunity in October to work on a horror film called Roanoke. And that was written and directed by a woman, Kristen Swinkles. And she actually, her and her producer, Brenton Hammond, were able to get funding from, I believe it was the Nova Scotia Tourism and Culture, who go and award grants. And what's awesome now is that people like the Nova Scotia Tourism and Culture, and especially Telefilm and Nova Scotia Film, are really recognizing horror as a viable genre and something that they should put money into. Because you think about it, there's been a lot of horror films out there that have been made for very, very limited funds and that have gone and exploded in theaters. Like, well, for example, Paranormal Activity is the most recent. That was made for $4,000.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, and it, I believe it made over at least over $100 million in the theaters. And they,
well, you know what that makes me want to do? It makes me want to just go get my handbag and see how much loose change I have. You know,
oh,
we might
sure.
do something together. What
and
do you think?
The thing is if you don't have enough change, you go on the internet. And there's all kinds of websites out there where you can basically go out there and put a public cry and say, look, I have this idea. Give me money, I will give you a credit on my film as like an executive producer or an associate producer, and you get a film credit and I get to make my film. Like that's, I'm have a little project in the background that I'm working on, and that's what I'm hoping to do with it.
Oh, really? Well, you know, and I do have actually one of our regular featured guests on Women Are Not Funny is Melissa Pierce, and her film, which is the documentary, is Life in Perpetual Beta. And she had some funding from Kickstarter and certainly some funding prior to that from just friends on the web. So mm-hmm. you're right. There's an opportunity. And particularly, I mean, you really can see it as an opportunity if a film with a budget of $4,000 went that big. Well, since you already are working on other projects, but one of the things that I really like to do is I'm such a giving person, and you know that about me, right?
Of course.
Okay.
You're giving me this, like, opportunity, even though, you know, I might someday take over your show.
Yeah, no. That, I mean, I'm scared, and that's really what I'm trying to do now is kind of butter you up and get you headed in the direction you need to head. No radio for you, darling. Yeah, I'm trying to distract you from your goal of taking over my show. No, I came up with some plots for scary movies, and I just thought I'd give them away to you as a gift. You know,
oh,
no charge.
Thank you.
No charge, because it is a struggle sometimes as an independent filmmaker to come up with funding, even though there are sources. But if mm-hmm. you could start off with some really, you know, scary plots, no charge, from me, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, for sure. That would be like half the battle right there.
Yeah, okay. But you'll have to write the script. But I think it'll be easy. I mean, these concepts are so true blue. Okay. Here it is. I mean, this is really, really scary. Listeners, try to, you know, if you scare easily, you may want to turn down the volume. No, don't. Just go ahead and listen. Okay, so here's my first idea. You're going to a big banquet, okay?
Okay.
And you buy a dress that's off the shoulder. And when you get there, every last woman at the banquet is also wearing an off-the-shoulder dress.
Okay.
Now, that's scary. That's scary, isn't it? Wouldn't that make a great horror movie? I mean, can you imagine the horror? Aren't you just horrified at the thought?
Well, I guess I would ask, like, what would the next step that the character is going to be doing? Like, are they going to be sneaking them slowly one by one in the coat room to, like, get rid of them?
Darling, that's not necessary. I mean, just the very idea is so horrifying. People will be running from the theater, you know, just at the thought of it. They'll just be screaming and running down the aisles because, you know, the very thought would be so scary, don't you think?
Yes.
Okay, all right, that's concept number one. Okay, number two, this one, I think this is really scary. I mean, this is a horror chick flick, but it's scary.
Okay.
A woman finds out that her favorite flavor of Ben & Jerry's has 600 calories in half a cup.
Okay, I've actually had nightmares about that.
Yeah, I told you. I mean, that's really scary. I think a lot of people couldn't handle it, you know.
No, you know, some people might look at it and then, I don't know.
It's a great idea, admit it. It's a great idea. And you're welcome. You're welcome, you know.
Thank you.
You're just so welcome. Okay, here's my final idea. I think three is plenty.
Okay.
You dream that you have this nightmare, kind of this typical nightmare that people who, like us, who've spent a lot of time in school have from time to time, even after they're out of school. You dream that you didn't go to class, you missed the final exams, the homework wasn't in your locker, and you don't graduate. And then you wake up and find out that it wasn't a dream. You actually didn't go to class. You did actually miss your final exams, and you're not going to graduate. Now, that's scary, don't you think?
Yes, that is definitely scary.
So, Sarah, you know, now you're going to be busy because I have given you three first-rate ideas, really scary ones.
I can't believe you're just giving them away.
I know. I amaze myself. I truly do. But here's something, you know, that I really need help with. I've helped you. It's only fair, don't you think, after I gave you those great plots?
I will try to help you as best as I can.
Okay, for someone like me who admits I'm a neophyte to the horror genre, or for even someone who's a big fan. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us several horror movies that are truly must-sees? Kind of a survey. What I'm asking for here is not necessarily Sarah McDonald's favorite horror movies, although they could be. You could go that direction. But okay. What I'm looking for is something that if I, you know, watch these movies, I'm never in this embarrassing predicament again where I'm just so ignorant of horror movies and talking to a stellar director of horror movies. You know, the future. I'm talking to the future of horror movies right at this moment. And I don't want to be in a position where I come to it with the same sort of ignorance that I'm coming to it today. So what are those movies that we should really, really make sure that we see?
Well, I have to say, even though you said, you know, they might not be my three favorite horror movies, I have to say my three most favorite horror movies I would suggest to people to watch to kind of gain more appreciation of the genre.
Darling, I was looking for about 10. You're only
I have lists here. I'm just telling you what my three favorites.
Okay, favorites. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
A good place to start off would be definitely with the original Omen, which was done in 1976 with Gregory Peck. It's more psychological than gore, and it is hands down my most favorite horror movie and is completely timeless. Blair Witch is also another excellent film to watch because pretty much everybody who watches horror films has seen Blair Witch and has either animately loves it or animately hates it. I loved it just because I grew up in the woods and it just really kind of reminded me of, you know, my childhood and, you know, playing in the woods and getting scared by weird noises and stuff like that. And also Rec, which is a Spanish horror film about zombies, is hands down my most favorite zombie movie ever. That actually is really, really scary, though. I've recommended that movie to people before, and they haven't actually watched the whole thing. There was an American remake of it called Quarantine, but I actually couldn't watch the whole thing. I much rather the original.
So there we have Sarah's top three. Her top three horror movies that she's recommending to all of us. The Omen with Gregory Peck, more psychological than gore. And The Blair Witch Project. Oh, such a famous movie, and I've never seen it. All I know is that the camera is purposely unsteady. And The Wreck, a really, really scary Spanish zombie movie.
Well, I've just had a rather brilliant idea, and you're going to agree, I know, because you're kind of like me. You're kind of sneaky, aren't you?
Just a little bit.
Okay. Here's my sneaky idea. On Women Are Not Funny, we have this wonderful list of listeners who have signed up for the list. They're called the Awesome Pretties.
Okay.
And the reason they're called the Awesome Pretties, can you guess?
Is because they're awesome and they're pretty?
Absolutely. But do you know, it is totally by the honor system. I mean, you can join the list just based on the honor system. If you're awesome and pretty, you can be an awesome pretty. And it's actually the Awesome Pretties. It's actually the Awesome, 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 Awesome Pretties, but we shortened it just to make it, you know, a little easier to say. Well, I've been telling the Awesome Pretties for a very long time that there are benefits to being a member of the Awesome Pretties. And, you know, I just haven't come through. So I had a very sneaky idea. Why don't I twist your arm and ask you to come up with a list of your dozen top movies, your dozen top horror movies, and we will send that list to the Awesome Pretties. So anyone who's listening who would like to get that list from Sarah can join the Awesome Pretties, but only Sarah, only if they're awesome and pretty. You know,
okay.
One doesn't qualify. You actually have to be both.
Well, since Our show today featured a woman director. I thought it would be a good time for me to reveal something that very few people know about me, and that is that I consider myself the female Stanley Kubrick. Stanley Kubrick was a very famous director, now deceased, and of course that's something we don't have in common, but we're both Libras, and he was somewhat reclusive, and I'm not so much so, but I am private. And, you know, like Stanley Kubrick, I'm extraordinarily creative. And the way I know that is I remind myself of it frequently. Now, both of us like to talk on the telephone. And I think I may be the one who invented the phrase eyes wide shut. So I consider myself the female Stanley Kubrick, and I think I will continue to say so until you tire of it, which you probably already have.
You have been listening to Women Are Not Funny Radio, a New Media International production. On behalf of Kay Ballard, her fabulous guest, and the secretly hilarious Women Are Not Funny team, thanks for being here. This is Aaron James Lee, one of the producers of the show, putting up with Kay Ballard for yet another week, and also reminding you that you can listen to our replays anytime you please by going to our website at womenarenotfunny.com. And don't forget to subscribe via iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. One more thing, don't forget to join us again next week for another episode of Women Are Not Funny Radio.